Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller is here as we go inside the reporter's notebook. And you know already this is one of my favorite features of the week. I love the information that you compile in the reporter's notebook. It's on federalnewsradio.com. And the first item that I want to cover with you is this concept of strategic sourcing on steroids. Tom Sharp of the General Services Administration writing about this week. And it seems to have kind of gone under the radar. Not a lot of people have talked about it. Why? What's Tom writing about, and why do you think it escaped attention this week, Jason?
It's this idea of category management. It's a concept that actually GSA has been talking about, I would say off and on for about the last 12 to 18 months, is changing the schedules. I think initially it was actually considered something, the demand-based schedules, where they were going to look at where the demand is and really just focus the schedules on those areas. This idea of category management concept is a little different, but it's still a change in the way that the general supply schedules are going to work going in the future. And really, it's a series of tools that GSA is trying to give to both their own contracting officers, but also people who use the schedule, which is basically every other agency across the government. But it is a major change to the way they do this. And Tom Sharp wrote in a blog post on the GSA website, where we have a link to that on federalnewsradio.com. And I think this is part of the way GSA wants to increase its market share in the government when it comes to procurement. Let me just give you a couple of quick numbers. In fiscal 2012, the Federal Acquisition Service, which Tom Sharp is the commissioner of, brought in about $55 billion in sales, about 13.5% of all acquisition spending across government. Sharp says, and he's told me this on occasion, that he'd like to increase that to about 17% of all acquisition spending. So, you know, a pretty hefty increase, almost a 3.5% increase over the next few years. And I think this category management concept is a way to do this. And what GSA says about it is it's a more coordinated strategic approach to government-wide purchasing and cost savings. And that's why I think the comment strategic sourcing on steroids really works well here, because while strategic sourcing was the idea of how can we take advantage of volume discounts across the government, this is not only looking at volume discounts, but also adding tools behind it so you know where to go, how to go, where to go, and why to go in this direction. So the tools are going to be several, and we can go to them in a second. But the first thing GSA is doing is actually developing a common acquisition platform. And this will actually provide the what they call the walkways to these tools that are going to be coming out over the next few years. And all this, again, focus on it's a way to purchase better, to be smarter about purchasing, and then also reduce price variability and be smarter. So I think let's go into the tools in a second, but I think that really is the what they're heading toward.
Here's what Tom wrote that jumped out at me, Jason. He writes about developing a higher level of expertise around core categories of business. I'm paraphrasing this part. Guide buyers to the best solutions for them. And then he writes this. Sometimes that solution will be a GSA contract vehicle, and other times it might be another agency's contract vehicle. Is it possible that it will be a hard sell for somebody to believe that GSA is going to be an expert not only in their own schedules, but in NITAC and NASA SOUP and DHS Eagle and all of these other contract vehicles too?
Well, remember, GSA already does assisted acquisition. So you could go to GSA and say, I want to buy from Eagle, let's say, or I want to buy from NITAC or SOUP. GSA can do that for you already. Now, why wouldn't you go to NITAC or SOUP? I don't know, or NASA. But if you wanted to use GSA services, so they already have some of that expertise. What they're basically also saying is, we know we don't have the answer to everything, so we will help you find the right answers, or at least point you in the direction where you can find the right answers. And I think this common acquisition platform is the step toward opening the door and say, here's where you can find the answers.
Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller here. So I'm going to put these tools out one at a time, and I'm going to ask you to tell me about each of them that are available on the Common Acquisition Platform. The first one is a procurement optimizer.
I think the idea behind this, and again, more details are coming, but from what we know, is it's going to give contracting officers the ability to compare contracts. What do I get? Terms and conditions, prices even, and to ensure that you are getting competition. So if I'm buying widgets at, you know, Alliance Small Business and I'm buying widgets at 8A Stars and it's the same widgets. What am I getting for the same thing? And are terms and conditions different?
Market Intelligence Center is just a collection, it sounds like, of all of the information around all these categories.
The idea of how to do market research. Who's out there? Okay. Who provides what? What vendors could potentially meet my needs? Remember, market research is huge. One of the issues that we've talked about, and I think you talked about this with Jared when we went inside the DOD reporter's notebook last week.
Yes.
Which is why the DOD has issued this deviation to the FAR saying that GSA schedules are no longer fair and reasonable. Do your own analysis. Mm-hmm. Because when you do the market research, you're supposed to say, okay, well, who's out there and what can they do?
All right. The next one is ClearView. And this is something that a lot of agencies have wanted for a long time regarding pricing.
Exactly. I think this goes back to the prices paid portal that OMB is developing. It may not be the same exact thing. We'll have to wait and see. But it's the idea of how much is this widget, again, we'll go back to that, being bought for across the government and who's buying it in quantities. If I'm buying 1,000 widgets and you're buying 10,000 widgets and your price is cheaper, I should be able to see that to say, oh, well, maybe I should buy 10,000 too because that cost per unit is a lot better.
Or maybe get my buy of 1,000 on with yours in a real honest-to-God strategic sourcing
exactly.
type initiative.
Exactly.
So we're paying an 11,000 price instead of 10. All right, the collaborative contracting library.
Now, this seems to be just really templates for agencies to use in terms of when they're buying complex buys, have a community of experts that they can go to and say to them, hey, when you bought this, whatever this is, again, you know, we'll say widget services, mm-hmm. just to keep the theme going here, how do you do it? What pitfalls should I avoid? What are some of the best practices? And I think that's an interesting one because it's not going to be your typical pricing or analysis tools, but really take advantage of best practices.
And the last one is e-marketplace. What's that all about?
Now, this seems to be a transaction platform for simple purchases, probably under the simplified acquisition threshold, the idea that agencies are, hey, if you're just trying to make a quick buy, here's how you can go through it. I think Larry Allen, a guest on your show with Allen Federal Business Partners, says this could actually be part of the change to GSA Advantage, maybe an upgrade, maybe a newer technology platform.
All right. There's more about this inside the reporter's notebook. My colleague Jason Miller writing it on federalnewsradio.com. We just have a couple of minutes left. And you're writing about the decision that was announced today, that President Obama introducing Sylvia Matthews Burwell as his selection to become the Secretary of Health and Human Services to replace Kathleen Sebelius. We've already seen Senator McCain come out and say he will support Ms. Burwell's nomination to become HHS Secretary. I think when you have somebody who's been as outspoken against the Obama administration as Senator McCain has been, support one of his selections, it's a pretty good indicator of where Republicans are, and it indicates to me, at least, she's going to be fine. She's going to get confirmed. However, what I wonder about is what this says about the Office of Management and Budget for the rest of the Obama administration's term, Jason.
Yeah, I think this is what's frustrating to me. It's not that Sylvia Burwell is not qualified to be HHS Secretary.
Absolutely not.
She'll be the third OMB director that will be there for less than 18 months. You have Peter Orszag, who was there for 18 months, Jack Lew, 14 months, and then Burwell has been there for 12 months. This is a sign to me of the lack of understanding that the Obama White House has in the so important role that OMB plays. You know, and I've written this story before about GSA when they had to do a long wait to get an administrator in there. Is Congress and the White House not understanding the role GSA plays? And I feel it's the same way about OPM. These three agencies play such a huge role in the management of the government, yet the White House consistently taps people in OMB to go do something else. Jack mm-hmm. Lew, Secretary of Treasury.
Yes.
Peter Orszag, he left after 18 months, and now Sylvia Burwell, again, going to HHS.
Jeffrey Zients moved to the Economic...
Yes. National Council.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
And what is frustrating is because OMB keeps losing these senior leaders, they have lost standing in the government. And this is not just me, you know, assuming this. I've talked to several both former and current government officials, some former OMB people who say the authority, the influence that they have over management stuff is just not there anymore. And that is a shame because OMB really drives the management changes. And let me be clear here. This is not a problem with the staff at OMB. I've been told that, hey, if you ever get a chance to work at OMB, you have to work there.
Mm-hmm.
And because it is a wonderful place to work. Now, people may be hearing this and scratching their head going, what's he, crazy? But the fact is that you work with great people, dedicated people, hardworking people, really smart people. But if they don't, but if the leadership isn't there, and in this case, Sylvia Burwell, and in the case of, you know, the deputy director for management was not there for a long time, that has a snowball effect through the rest of government. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a shame. If you compare what's happening with the Obama administration to the last two administrations, so one Democrat, one Republican, and let me just go through this quickly. Under George W. Bush, you had Mitch Daniels was there 29 months. Josh Bolton there 34 months. These are as OMB directors.
Yes.
Rob Portman 13 months and Jim Nussle 16 months, but the administration ended.
Mm-hmm.
Under President Clinton, you had Leon Panetta there 21 months, Alice Rivlin there 18 months, Franklin Raines there 20 months, and Jacob Lew there 32 months, and then the end of the administration. If you have people there for 2 years or more, or at least up to 2 years, they go through two budget cycles. They create these relationships with Congress, and they can influence management across the government, and that's so important.
Yeah, I think that's really significant, too, when you look at the tenures of the people in the Obama administration that you pointed out and compare them with the Bush and Clinton administrations, because even the folks who were there shorter periods of time, for example, the shortest of the tenures of OMB directors of the Clinton administration were Alice Rivlin, 18 months, Frank Raines, 20 months. But Frank Raines, if I'm not mistaken, had already been Commerce Secretary before he took the OMB director's job. And so that position would have given him some relationships in Congress. Ms. Rivlin had been at OMB before she was director. So those relationships also were in place. And same thing with
Leon Panetta and Jack Lew, both.
Correct. But in the Bush administration, Rob Portman, 13 months, but he had served in the House of Representatives. And Jim Nussle, 16 months, had been the Budget Committee chairman in the House.
Yep.
So these were people who came into those jobs already with experience and relationships, where Mr. Orszag may have had some of that as a CBO director. Certainly Jack Lew did in his previous tenure as OMB director for the Clinton administration. But Ms. Burwell didn't really have much of that at all, because a lot of the Congress has turned over since she was in the Clinton administration.
But, and it's not just that, though, but you need that consistency there, and you need that oomph that OMB brings. And without that, things end up falling by the wayside. And again, this is not saying that the people in OMB who will be left or can't do a good job, but having a political appointee director there makes such a difference. And I hear that from everybody who I've talked to about this. This is not just, oh, well, it would be nice if they were there. But the fact is, OMB drives the ship. And right now, without an OMB director, you really don't have that fully, you know, captain with the bars on the shoulder. You have the second mate who, if you ever watch Gilligan's Island, you got to be careful. This is your second mate.